Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Forever Dog.
Welcome to another episode of Best Show Bests, the greatest hits of the best show, with me, your host, Tom Sharpling. If you like what you hear, make sure you join us every Tuesday night on Twitch at 6 p.m. Pacific for a brand new episode of the Best Show featuring callers, celebrity guests, live music, and plenty of surprises. Enjoy! I'm being told that we do have a surprise on the computer box. I will say this. I'm truly nervous right now. I am truly nervous about this. My breathing is heavy. This might be it for me. This is a scary one for me. I'm nervous. Let me see. Do we go to the, let's go to the screen and welcome to the show. Do I unmute here? Do you guys got that?
We got it.
You got it?
Yes.
I would like to welcome to the show a true, look, the word hero gets thrown around a lot these days, willy-nilly, but this is a true hero of mine. Can we please welcome to the show, Joe Flaherty is here with me. Oh my God, the greatest. Joe, can you hear me?
Oh, wait,
Okay. Tom, that's my bad. 1 second,
okay.
Please.
1 second, hang tight.
Sorry about that. I think you should be hearing it now.
Okay. We have Joe Flaherty on the show. So exciting. Joe, can you hear me?
No, how's that?
There it is. I hear okay. You.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, my goodness. Joe Flaherty, as a kid, I never thought this day would ever happen. You have meant so much to me for so long in my life. As formative as anything that's ever been a part of anything is you and the comedy you've made. So just off the top, I want to say thank you for being as great as you have been. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much. It's nice to know. Yeah. It's really nice to know.
Well, it's only downhill from here now. I got the compliments out of the way. No,
sure,
I'm kidding.
We got that. Yeah.
Now, Joe Flaherty, SCTV, Freaks and Geeks. You've done it for so long, and one of the things that you're doing this Friday, there's a screening of the movie The Wrong Guy that you did with Dave Foley.
Yes,
it's going to be at the Dynasty Typewriter at Dynasty Typewriter in LA, and I just want to give people info on it. Friday, May 19th at Dynasty Typewriter. Hollywood Entertainment is doing The Wrong Guy reunion and screening, which is going to feature Dave Foley will be there, David Higgins, Jay Kogan, and Joe Flaherty. There are tickets on standby that'll be available at the door, so people should figure that out for Friday. Get your tickets. This is one you don't want to miss. So how are you doing these days, Joe? How's everything going for you?
I'm okay. I'm no longer young.
Okay.
I'll be 82 in June.
Oh, my God.
I know. That's too much. That's too much.
It's too much. Yes. Well.
I never expected that. I'm an 82-year-old guy. My life has shrunk.
Okay.
Quite a bit. You know, what I do, the things I do, just things that I need to do to live, get by living.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, all of a sudden, though, I've been getting these requests for interviews, and that's kind of interesting. I had another request today for an interview. I forget what it is. I got to check.
you got to turn that one down. That one, we're canceling that one. This is this is the interview. Sorry.
I think that's radio though. I think it's just audio.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, then sure, we can allow it. Then we'll let them do their thing. Now,
My life has been pretty uninteresting, I got to say.
Okay. Well, maybe we can make it interesting tonight. Maybe we could change that a little bit.
Yeah.
So you made the movie Wrong Guy, and there's a screening of it. It was a movie that was maybe underappreciated when it came out, and this great group, Hollywood Entertainment, is putting these screenings together. I actually moderated a panel at a screening they put together of a movie your brother directed, Clifford.
Yes.
So I met your brother, Paul, a few months ago. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's a good movie, funny movie. It hasn't been appreciated enough by the general public, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it has a cult following, of course.
Yeah.
And the Wrong Guy never was released in the States.
It was only
released in Canada. Yeah, so that's why they're having this whole thing to try to get released in the States.
That's amazing. And it was a hit in Canada. Is that?
Yeah.
It's a really funny movie. If you haven't seen it, you gotta check it out. It's a seriously funny movie. So you grew up in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And who were your earliest comedy heroes at that, being a kid growing up in Pittsburgh? Who started to make you think about the idea of being funny?
You know, that's interesting. I used to be asked that question a lot when I was doing SCTV. I couldn't really think of many. But now I've had time to consider all of that stuff. And there were. I think it started with Mad Magazine.
Okay.
Way back when they started, when they were in just a paperback form.
Mm-hmm.
It was all satire, and I loved that. I just loved that. And then we had a disc jockey in Pittsburgh named Reg Kordick.
Okay.
Who had a great show. It was really fun, a lot of fun. He started that whole thing of doing clips, during the show. He'd do but they were all audio clips from different movies and things like that. You know, out of nowhere, he'd say, well, that's pretty good. And then you'd hear Basil Rathbone saying, let's drink some champagne.
That Dickie Goodman thing. You remember Dickie Goodman?
No, I don't.
He would do a record where it'd be like, I'm here talking to Jaws, and it's like, what do you think the swimmers are going on today? And then he would play like Dying, Oh My, as if it was just all clips.
Right.
Kind of getting a back and forth going.
Right. And that's what he did. He did a lot of these things. He was hugely popular in Pittsburgh, hugely popular. Everybody loved that show. And so that was another influence. Reg, Mad Magazine. And then, of course, I used to watch TV a lot. I used to watch Steve Allen. I used to love Steve Allen's show.
Sure.
And so Steve was somewhat of an influence on me, too.
Mm-hmm.
See, now, other than that, there were a lot, though, that things that I took in, mostly satiric things, though, satire.
Sure.
The old Sid Caesar show, your show of shows.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love that because they did satire. They did, parodies.
They do a lot of parodies of movies and of foreign films and this, which is obviously, you can see the through line to what you eventually did on SCTV.
Right. Right. And, good. All right. My son just brought these in. I don't know if you can see them or not. It'll show.
What is it? Oh my God! There's you and Bruno and Dr. Tongue. This is the greatest.
Right.
Oh my God!
There you go.
That's beautiful. It's and look, there's
here and here's one more. This is something I got from a fan.
Okay,
let me see if I can see if we can center this. If we can do this properly, yeah. Another way. That's the blood-sucking monkey from West Mifflin, Pennsylvania.
That's right, yes.
Okay, oh, the cape, yeah. Somebody just sent that to me in a mail a while back. But it's very, they love the blood-sucking monkeys from West Mifflin in Pittsburgh. It's a yeah. big hit, Pittsburgh.
Yes. So that was, oh my God, there's so many things. When I was preparing to talk to you, one of the things that really came back to me was I would stay up on Friday nights trying to, like, it was like a test to see if I could stay up to watch SCTV. And really? Sometimes I'd wake up at Saturday morning, I'd realize I fell asleep, I'd be mad. All week I'd be mad because I missed it. And I got to do better. I got to learn how to stay up later. But when I would stay up, it felt like a show that was made just for me and my friends. It was like, I never felt more kind of like this exists to make me happy. So.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You're right. Right. And I remember when we were being honored in Aspen, Colorado, the host, I can't remember the guy's the host. He was a huge fan.
Okay.
And he said the same thing. He said he thought the show was just made especially for him and his friends, and then watch it every week without fail. Who was the guy? Now I just forgot who the guy was. He had a talk show on, pretty big.
Okay.
It'll come to me.
Somebody will get, one of the people listening also throw facts at me. Was it Conan?
Yes,
it was Conan. Okay. Conan,
there right. we very good. Yeah. Very good.
Sure.
And that's what he said. He said it was a special little thing that he and his friends, and they thought they were the only ones in the world that loved the show.
Oh.
And so that's the way it kind of went. It was just, we had this special following of people that loved, love the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good. That was great. We liked the people that liked our show.
Sure.
We had a lot of different, we'd have university professors and writers and, as it turned out, film producers and film directors that would watch our show. But that's pretty much the way it went. It was a private little show. We never had ratings. Let me just put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
We never had very good ratings. When we were on NBC, it was sad. You look at the numbers. It was really sad. Brandon Tartikoff, who was in charge of NBC at the time and picked our show up, he wanted us to change the show and sort of make it more like a regular Saturday Night Live show. And we refused. We said, this is our show. This is what we want to do. But boy, the numbers were terrible.
Yeah.
Bad.
But it's also, nobody's talking about Saturday Night Live sketches from 1982 or whatever. Those things that are in the moment are one thing. And that's important for things to be, feel alive and engage, and you see things from the news that week. But there's something, there was always something special that SCTV was. It felt built to last. Like the comedy ran deep for me.
Yeah.
And there were so many layers to things and things you didn't catch the first time. You'd have to watch it again and see if then you'd be like, oh, that's that. And this is like so many. There was such a depth to it that's what makes it still stand the test of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. And we never wanted to be contemporary on the show. We didn't want to do jokes about who was president at the time or any of that stuff. We just did stuff that we thought was funny.
Yeah.
And it was great because we had a great group of people. I can't believe how pretty much accidentally we just got that group together. Were they good.
It's the most impressive lineup you could ever dream of in terms of comedy, to have you, Eugene Levy, John Candy, Catherine O'Hara, Andrea Martin, Dave Thomas, Rick Moranis, Martin Short. It just that's off the top, like right off the top. And then it's like you couldn't dream of a lineup like, and Harold Ramis is also in the mix.
Yes, Harold. Yeah.
unbelievable lineup. It is like pure magic that that happens. Like the universe wanted that to happen.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Because I can't think of how it would have happened any other way.
Yeah.
It just was a collision of the stars or whatever, but or the planets.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. Boy, did it work. And you know what was interesting? I worked with those guys on Saturday Night Live while we were still doing SCTV, I think, or right afterwards, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And they all said they loved SCTV. They thought it was better than Saturday Night Live. And they wished they were on it.
SCTV.
Mm-hmm. All of those guys. Yeah.
It's always the thing that they're like, oh, I wish I was on the thing, but I'll stay here making 10 times as much money as you're making over on SCTV. But you're doing God's work over there.
Right, that's right. And getting worldwide recognition.
Yeah.
And nobody's watching us, but I don't care. None of us cared. We just did the show the way we wanted to do. We had pressure to change it a lot, mm-hmm. but we wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
We just said, we're going to do this stuff that we like and the hell with everything else.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live. At the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
And how, with all of those talented people, how did you find your lane, the path that for what you would do that would differentiate you from what everybody else did? What was that like for you to carve out your own path?
Yeah. So when we started it, we got very, very beginning. In our first show, we cast John as Johnny LaRue.
Sure.
That's a character that he did throughout the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
I did a version of Guy Caballero in that first show. Mm-hmm. It's a version, but it wasn't really anything like he became.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harold was our station manager. So Harold Ramis was our station manager. John was Johnny LaRue. And from that, we kind of built, you know, the characters that say like Dave would do or Eugene, any of the cast members, they didn't like doing this. But I said, we should repeat some of these characters because television is different than, you know, other mm-hmm. forms that people like to see characters come back that they like.
Yeah.
And I had to pull some teeth to do it, but they decided to, you know, do their characters more than once. And so that was great. Because everybody came up with good characters. You know?
Oh, my God. It's the best character.
Yeah.
They're the best. And Guy Caballero, what was the thought behind Guy Caballero, who was the station manager of SCTV, and he was in a wheelchair, even if he didn't need it, but he was in it for respect. He wanted respect. Right. So it was, how did that come about?
That came about because, one time I was when Harold was station manager of the show,
mm-hmm.
he was the big wheel on the show. And every once in a while, he'd get phone calls from this guy, which was me, a gruff voice saying, you know, Mo Green, what are you doing? You know, stop that. Stop that immediately. That kind of stuff. And so he said, who is this? Man, I just sort of out of the blue said, using that old gay Caballero thing, I said, this is Guy Caballero. Uh-huh. And you can see Harold actually laughing when I just do that line. But so I just did it, first of all, as a voice.
Mm-hmm.
But then Harold had to leave the show. And so we decided that Guy would take over the station, not just the station manager. He'd be the owner and president. of SCTV. Harold thought I should play up my South American Nazi ties.
Yeah, you had your Boys from Brazil suit there.
Boys from Brazil thing. And so that's how we sort of got that started. Yeah, and Harold said, you know, you should have, oh, I said, I wanted to be like, no one's going to get this reference. Lionel Barrymore in, what's the name of that movie? With Humphrey Bogart on Key Largo. Key Largo, I think.
Key Largo, yeah.
Key Largo, yeah. Key Largo. He was rolling around in a white suit and in a in a wheelchair with a Panama hat. And I said, that's what I want to look like that. And so that's what I did. I ended up in a wheelchair. And then Harold said, you should tell everyone. And I said, I don't want to be stuck in that wheelchair all the time, though. He said, well, you should be able to get up and out, and, you know, move around.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone asks you, you say you just use the wheelchair for respect, which didn't make a lot of sense to me at the time. Uh-huh. That's what I did. And that's how Caballero was created.
Mm-hmm.
So we had him there all the time to, you know, kind of move the show along, introduce scenes and stuff like that. And the other people begrudgingly started doing characters that repeat characters. You know, Gene was quick to pick up on doing things like Woody Tobias Jr., better known as Bruno.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. And John also, he repeated Dr. Tongue.
Yeah.
So that was quite a combination. Yeah. And myself. So we ran with that. And Harold, who else? Dave had his characters.
Yeah.
Dave didn't like the idea too much, but all of his characters were angry. So he was always.
Yeah. Bill Needle was always. Bill Needle,
exactly. Yes.
Yeah. The.
And Andrea was Edith Prickly.
Yep. Edith Prickly.
She was that. Yeah.
Catherine O'Hara was Yeah, she's. I want to have your children. Why am I blanking?
Bury your children.
I want to bury your children. It was
Lola. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lola. What the heck was her last name?
Heatherton. Lola Heatherton. Yeah. Exactly. Lola Heatherton. Yeah. Yes. The
I gave her that name. I said, you should do a Joey Heatherton impression, and then she said, "Yeah, but I'll throw some Lola Falana in there."
Sure.
And
that's
God, but we had so much fun doing that show.
You can tell how much fun you are having.
Yeah.
Because it felt like this sweet spot. You could do impressions of people. You could make up characters. You'd smash them together. Like some of your impressions, like you doing the, this might be a one you don't expect. Like your version, you doing Gavin MacLeod. It's one of the funniest things because he just kept saying, "I'm lucky, I'm lucky,
I'm just lucky." Yeah.
What was that like? Like, did you ever hear any get any response from people you did impressions of over the years?
You know, that's interesting. I never did. Dave got negative feedback from people who did. Richard Harris was one who wasn't too pleased. Rick Moranis said that Dick Cavett wasn't real happy with his impression. Plus, uh-huh. We also heard that Woody Allen was into a person with Rick's Woody Allen. But
Dave Thomas doing the, when he does that, what is an award? That thing at the award show, and he gets the brick. He gets hit in the chest with a brick.
Yeah. We love throwing things on performers on stage. We'd hit him with bricks. We'd hit him with bowling balls. Andrew got hit a couple times with coconuts and bowling balls. Uh-huh. Good way to show your bombing up there is just have someone in the audience hit you.
Yeah, get hit in the chest with a brick.
Big, heavy ball or a brick, yeah.
So you never heard from Alan Alda. Alan Alda was one of your impressions, too.
No, never heard anything from Alan that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that one was pretty decent one too. I thought that was
It was a great, yeah.
Yeah.
And Sammy Maudlin was kind of the ultimate version of the showbiz, like the ass kissy kind of back padding, the Sammy Maudlin show where you were the host of a talk show where it was kind of the, because that's the other thing with SCTV. Even as a kid, I could feel these guys are making fun of the stuff my parents liked.
Yeah.
And they're pretty much, and they're drawing a line between what my parents liked and what I'm going to like. This is where the line is. It was Letterman and it was SCTV saying, here's the line. We're on the other side of the line and we're rejecting what that past stuff was. All the smarmy showbiz, where people probably hate each other, but they're saying they love them.
Well, you know, we based that on a specific show. It was the Sammy Davis show.
Mm-hmm.
And he that's what he did. He'd invite all his showbiz buddies on, and they'd all come on and tell each other how great they were, you know, and how much he loved them. And they said, oh, Sammy, I love you too. And the shows were just these cheap schmooze fests.
Yeah.
And so we said, let's do that. You know, let's have some characters. Gene wanted to do that bad stand-up comic.
Bobby Bittman.
Bobby Bittman, yeah. And of course, John, I gave him that part of William B. Williams, who was the actual co-host on the Sammy Maudlin show. William B. Williams, he did that. It was great. I loved William B.
He was on that. Now, there was the episode where William B. Williams, he realizes he's bringing the show down and he's going solo with his own talk show. I truly don't think I ever laughed as much as I did at that episode, because he comes out, he bombs doing the monologue. He's got Irvin Cohen is the guest and he's mad at him. And what was based on the Joey Bishop show? Is that what that?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Regis Philbin was the co-host when he first started out, Joey Bishop. The ratings weren't great.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said something, a critic said something about Regis Philbin. He took umbrage to. And so one day on the show, he just said, okay, it's been good working with you, Joey. But I've been bringing the show down. The critics say I'm holding you back. So goodbye. And he just walked off.
Uh-huh.
And Bishop had no idea. This was not planned or anything. And he just had this look on his face like, you know, what the hell was that?
Uh-huh. Yeah. He just couldn't.
So, based on something that probably a reference that very few people got would know about. But still, that's what we did. We used that. And then we had William B. walking off his show because he's bringing down Sammy's ratings. It's his own show.
And then Sammy Maudlin rolls in as the hero.
Oh, right.
When he says, he's like, Irvin Cohen, he's got more hits than McLean Stevenson's got bombs. And he's like,
right. That kind of stuff. Yeah.
It's just the world you all built is just nothing will ever top it. What is the appeal for you of playing dumb people? Was that fun for you to play stupid people?
You know what? I never thought about that, but I ended up doing that, didn't I? There were two things I guess I played. That's dumb people a lot. And drunk people. I did a lot of drunk stuff. But I guess I did it well enough. I know everybody liked what I did on all the acts. All of the cast members liked the stuff I did on the soap opera as Rocco.
Oh, yeah. Days of the Week.
Rocco. Yeah. Rocco was dumb. I mean, he was just pure dumb.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Gene wrote it for me for the quiz show, what was that called?
Halfwits,
yes. Yeah. Yes, and I played a really dumb character on that.
Arthur Liggett was your name.
Very good, very good. Arthur Andrew Liggett. I
believe, yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, the names you came up with also, Haji D. Robertus.
a childhood friend of mine.
Really? Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, who later became a doctor, strangely enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Haji D. Robertus. People seem to respond to that word, that name, didn't they?
Yeah. You always had, yeah, it was just, how did you, like, what were the behind the scenes things? Like, how were you guys laughing all the time making these things? What was, how long were the days? Was it just a?
Oh yeah, it was a long, it was arduous. We were writing and performing. And boy, we spent a lot of time doing that show. It was tough. It was a tough grind. And we'd start every season off liking each other. By the end, we couldn't stand each other.
Just too, close quarters.
Yeah. So, writing and performing, I'm telling you, our days were really bad and long.
Mm-hmm.
When we never had any breaks. But as soon as we finished shooting a scene, we'd have to go in there and write a scene.
Sure.
Finish writing that scene, we had to go in and shoot a scene. And the days were long, brutal, 12-hour days a lot of times. And so it was, but you know what? And no one knew about our show. It wasn't like Saturday Night Live where we had audiences outside waiting to cheer us on. Nobody was there. So we just had, all we had was our show and ourselves, especially in Edmonton. I'll tell you, there was nothing to do there. That wasn't like New York City, you know?
Sure.
Saturday.
Yeah. How'd you kill time in Edmonton? What did you do for fun?
We'd work. We'd write sketches in our hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it. I think it had one decent Italian restaurant who threw us out one night because we weren't wearing suits or sport coats.
Uh-huh.
But we have a television show on it. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, everybody knows that great Italian food in Edmonton, of course.
Yeah, right.
Yes. So it was a grind. You're working. Who could crack you up the easiest? Who could just get you to break?
I think two people, John Candy and Gene Levy. Okay. Eugene Levy. Yeah.
Sure.
Yes.
You remember any specific moments where you just couldn't hold it together?
That's a good question. I wish I would have had a little time to think about that one because that we were able to get it through, though. We were very professional. We wouldn't crack up on camera ever.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, when we did the very first Bruno and Dr. Tongue thing about Death Motel, Gene made me laugh.
Uh-huh.
He had a character named Bruno.
Yeah.
But the actor playing Bruno was Woody Tobias Jr.
Yeah, who was kind of a little, he was a pompous,
yeah,
he was kind of a blowhard.
Yeah, and when we first started doing it, I'd refer to Gene as Woody, and he said, no, I'm not Woody. No, I'm not Bruno. I'd say Bruno, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not Bruno, I'm Woody Tobias Jr.
Yeah.
But anyway, stuff like that. Geez, that one scene I love doing with Gene, on the Canadian show, the CBC show.
Sure.
We did a parody of the Front Page Challenge.
Okay.
And he played this character named Dougal Curry. And the whole thing wasn't fair because we were doing the CBC back in the 1950s, you know. But we wanted to parody CBC, the CBC network. Because Python would, you know, parody the BBC.
Yeah.
And so we decided to parody the CBC. And he played that that character, and it was a Front Page Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Dougal Curry, and you could only see his bottom teeth. He blacked out his top teeth. God, it was so funny. He was so boringly funny.
Uh-huh.
We had a lot of fun with that. That made me laugh, and I made him laugh too, because in that same scene too, you know, because sometimes I just go up with my lines because before it was so funny, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. And there were other times too. Trying to remember with John, you know, I work with both those guys on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Second City Theater.
Sure.
Where I think John and I really got a good, you know, rapprochement, whatever. Working with him a lot, and he'd laugh. He'd laugh at stuff that I do.
What was his energy like as a performer for you to play off of?
Oh, good, good. Oh, really good. John had great energy, and he'd bring that to the character, and he was fun to watch. You know, when you're playing another character, watching him play this character, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most fun we had, and Gene agrees with this, was in the soap opera where John played straight man to me as Rocco.
Mm-hmm.
He was
Dr. William Wainwright.
Ray Wainwright, yes, yeah. Yes. He played straight man to me. Yeah. But he was a great straight man.
Oh, you know? My God. Some of the funniest things. I see that it's all rushing back to me now when he was trying to get you to eat the sandwich in jail. Yeah. And he's like, just eat it. It's got green stuff on it. It's green stuff. and yes. You almost had it in your mouth.
Yeah. And then, of course, what was that drink I had to order? A scotch and, oh, yeah, scotch and tomato juice. He made me order that.
Oh, it just, the show has meant so much to me in so many ways. I want to ask you about when I told my friend Peyton you were going to be on. He said I have to ask you about 1941, but being in 1941.
Really, really.
Yeah.
No, I don't get that much. Yeah. Boy, that was interesting.
Because it's a strange movie that it was like one of Steven Spielberg's rare misses in terms of commercial.
Yes. And yes.
But it's a really interesting movie. I've seen it over the years a bunch of times, and it's kind of like, it kind of almost gets there, and then it's very frustrating.
Yes. So, here's the case with that. Steven, interestingly enough, he was a big fan of Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was a big fan of what's the movie that, Harold Belushi was in, the fraternity movie?
Oh, Animal House.
Animal House, yes. Yeah. So Steven loved that movie. And even after our first season on SCTV, Steven became a fan of SCTV. So I don't know how that happened, if he just decided to use me or if John put a good word in it for him, because he was definitely using John. He wanted Belushi and Candy for sure. And Danny Aykroyd, who was also a Second City guy. And so that I got into that. He got me the job. I was only supposed to last something like a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Because my part was nondescript. They didn't even have a character for the title. I was just up on stage. And so I started playing around with the camera. I mean, you know, with the dialogue, when the camera would come on me, I'd start improvising.
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed this Spanish character and I'd speak with a Spanish accent. And everybody was laughing, you know, everybody was on the set, were chuckling and laughing. Steven liked that. So he made the part bigger. He gave me a bigger part.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a couple of days, I ended up doing it for 3 weeks.
Okay.
And and I was happy. I thought it did a good job. I remember Pauline Kael, a critic, said that she wished the whole movie took place in that USO club.
Yes.
Because of the sequences there. I had a chance to just open up and he let me do whatever I wanted, whatever, say whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. So I padded my part quite nicely.
Sure.
There.
Yeah. You got it. Well, that's where the improv skills come in.
Steven loved comedy. He wanted to do a comedy, but he didn't have the vaguest idea of how to do a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, he doesn't have a comedic mind. you know? He just doesn't. I think he'll admit that now.
Sure. Yeah.
So he was always calling us in for suggestions. He'd call John Candy in. He'd call me in. He'd call Belushi. He'd call Danny in. What do you think I do about this? What do you think I do? So we had a, I had a feeling anyway. I thought, you know, this may not turn out too well.
Sure.
Steven.
Well, because
That's what happened.
One of the things is bigger isn't always better in comedy. Yeah. You got to pick your spots with the bigger stuff. And that movie is just all bigger.
Right. Right. I wish you would have stuck to the original script more, which Bob Zemeckis wrote, incidentally. Mm-hmm. Because that would have been a more coherent movie, you know?
Sure.
But he didn't. He pardon me?
Oh, no, I was agreeing with you.
Yeah. But he didn't do that. And so it just kind of, you know, just was scattered all over the place. It didn't have a central focus, a comedic focus. And so it didn't do well. And interestingly enough, I got a call after I did that movie. I did some other project. Then I got a call saying, you want to do a movie called, what the heck was that movie now? Jeez. No, I just went up on the movie. This will be happening quite often. used cars.
Of course. Used cars.
Yeah, they said, you want to come in and do used cars? We just fired John Candy. I said, what? Yeah, we just got rid of John Candy. Come to find out his agent booked him for two movies at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So they weren't happy with that. So they told him to pick one movie, but not used cars.
Was it Stripes that he would have done instead of used cars?
Let's see now what happened there. No. Whatever the movie was, he did was not very popular. I can't remember what it was, but I don't think it was a very popular movie.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been. I'd have to check into that. Look. So, so I ended up in used cars and working with Bob Zemeckis. And that was good. That was fun. I liked that. And he used me later in
Back to the Future 2.
Back to the Future Part 2.
Now, just so you get some perspective on where I'm coming from, I go to the theater, I see Back to the Future 2. The only thing I'm talking about leaving it was that Joe Flaherty had a telegram at the end of the movie.
Really?
That was my favorite part. Look, I love the movie, but I was still just like, that was the part that truly blew my mind.
Really? Because I wanted to try to be funnier than that, but Bob wanted me not to, you know, be too funny. So I had to play it fairly straight. So I did, trying to get some kind of cheap drama, melodramatic to it. And the funny thing I tell everybody is when we were shooting that, Bob came up to me and said, okay, it's going to be mud. We have mud all over the studio floor. Rain is going to be falling. We have water coming down, tons of water. We're going to put in lightning and thunder. He said, so you have to talk up. You really have to talk up over that. So I did. If you watch it, you see the movie, you know, I'm just, are you Marty McFly? Well, I happen to be, I'm talking at the top of my voice. And then you cut to Michael Fox and he's saying, yes, I'm Marty McFly. What are you here for? just his voice and all. But anyway, that was cool to do. I like that.
Yeah. I don't want to take too much of your time. I just want to, I just have to say, this is one of the true thrills for me to get to talk to you. As a kid, I never would think that I would get to talk to Joe Flaherty, and I did today. And it really is, mind blowing. And I have so much gratitude for everything that you've done. And, I just want to thank you on behalf of me and my friends who this changed all of our lives. Thank you so much for everything you made.
Well, thank you. That was very heartwarming. And I really appreciate you having me on the show. And yes, once again, it's great to talk to people that love the show that much. You love that show.
Oh,
I really love it.
Yes. I could ask you about about Count Floyd and Floyd Roberts and all this stuff, but there's only so much time we have. So
yeah,
I just, you know, thank you so much for this. And I hope everybody, I hope people go see the movie on Friday.
The wrong guy, yeah.
It's over at Dynasty Typewriter. The regular tickets are sold out, but there will be a standby line. So Joe will be there. And thanks again, Joe. What a treat this was.
Sure. Just one quick thing.
Of course.
Let's see. I'm going to move over. Can you, let me see.
Yeah.
Can you make out that poster in the background? I guess you can't.
I see. I can't make it. It's you. It's Guy Caballero.
Yes. And it says, is SCTV too good for TV? And it was the Soho News printed that front page. And that was fun. That was cool. Amazing. Really liked that. Yeah.
No, this, all right. This is such a, thank you so much. And, please tell Paul I said hi, and I hope I get to talk to you again.
Okay, great. Okay,
thanks so much.
Sure. Good talking to you.
You too. Now I'm going to cry.
All right.
I don't know what to do.
I don't either. What do I do again?
We don't know what to do. What do we do?
I'm going to mute you real quick, Joe.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that was... That's a true highlight. Wow.
The Best Show is produced in partnership with the Forever Dog Podcast Network. The show is hosted by Tom Sharpling and features John Worster, Michael Lisk, Jason Gore, and Pat Byrne. The show is produced and written by Jason Gore, Pat Byrne, Michael Lisk, Brett Davis, John Worster, and Tom Sharpling. The Best Show is executive produced by Tom Sharpling, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Co-executive produced by Jason Gore and Pat Byrne, segment producer Michael Lisk. The show is engineered and mastered by Andrew Gleason and Wesley Knapp. Graphic design, video editing, and social media by Brett Davis. Website and technical support by Martine Sellis. And the show is recorded at Forever Dog Studios in Los Angeles. Support The Best Show on Patreon over at patreon.com/thebestshow. And follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Best Show for Life. That's Best Show number 4, Life. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.